Wolf members Gary Anderson and Ellen Barker Anderson are actors who sometimes perform together, as in today. Later this spring, they will introduce to our local stage Lovers and Patriots, The Passion of John and Abigail Adams, written by Gary. This morning, they will share, with a little help from John and Abigail Adams, of course, we should say, Gary. This morning, they will share with us the values that guide not only their own lives, but those that guided the Adams couple as well. Lovers and Patriots, A Valentine. Gary and Ellen.
Before we begin, I'd like to say, is this on?
I got it. Good.
The name of the play is Lovers and Patriots, The Passions of Abigail and John Adams. So we're giving Abigail her much belated due. And both John and Abigail are noted among the 100 more famous UU members on all the charts that I've seen around the country. So we're very, very glad and privileged to be doing this before our fellow UU members. A Valentine, that's what it says in the program, but we'll let you decide if it's a Valentine or not. It does have to do with the Congress, after all. I have arrived at the Second Continental Congress in this year of 1774. Upon arriving here and meeting my fellow members, I have concluded that one useless man is a shame, two is a law firm, and three or more is a Congress. I have met no one here to change my opinion of that, a Congress.
They met me at the door with your letter. It gave me such a flow of spirits that I was not composed enough to sleep until 1 o'clock. I miss my partner and find myself unequal to the cares which fall upon me. I want to say so many things that I must omit. It is not fit to wake the soul by tender strokes of art or to ruminate upon happiness we might enjoy lest lengthier absences become intolerable.
Ah, good, debates. That's what we need, more debates. Debates, debates, and more debates. 50 strangers jealous of each other. We have numberless prejudices to remove here, Abigail, as well.
The Negroes got up a petition to the British, saying they would fight for the king, provided he would liberate them. I wish they were not a slave in the province. It always appeared a most iniquitous scheme to me to fight for ourselves for what we are daily robbing from those who have as good a right to freedom as we.
Abigail, this assembly is like no other that has ever existed. Every man in it is a great man, an orator, a critic, a statesman, and upon every question must show his oratory, his criticism, and his political abilities. If it was so moved that 3 and 2 should make 5, we should be entertained with logic, law, history, politics, and mathematics for 2 whole days, and then have to pass it unanimously.
My much-loved friend. Oh, how I envy the bearer of this letter that he should see you before I do. I dare not express to you how ardently I long for your return. The idea plays about my heart, awakens all the tender sentiments that years have increased. The whole collected stock will break forth, and your every expression of tenderness is a cordial to my heart. Unimportant as they are to the rest of the world, to me they are everything. You will burn these letters, lest they fall from your pocket and expose your most affectionate friend.
No, Abigail, you must keep these letters. They may exhibit to our posterity a kind of picture of these times. This day the Congress is finished. Not very likely I shall ever see this part of the world again. I've received my pay, 12 shillings. I'm determined to avoid public life. I have neither fortune, leisure, nor genius for it.
There is nothing so much to render a man fractious as living without females about him. The British have a list of all those they call obnoxious. They and their effects are to suffer destruction.
Obnoxious. Look for my name, please.
Our house has been in confusion. Refugees from Boston seek asylum for days. Recruits come in for lodging, even suppers. You can hardly imagine how we live.
Philadelphia. Philadelphia, where bastards and legislators are begotten. I have found this Congress like the last. Our business hazardous, our deliberations tedious.
This month, a day passed, you set off. I want to know how you do, how you stood your journey, how are your eyes. You don't say a word about your health.
I have had miserable health and blind eyes, yet I keep about.
Though my letters may have less merit, they have more words. Our little girl, Nabby, has enclosed a letter to you. Asks you to excuse the writing because of a sore thumb she has.
My dearest daughter, Nabby, your pretty letter gives me pleasure, both as a token of your affection and of your improvement in handwriting.
You would laugh to see them all run upon the sight of a letter. Like chickens when the hen clucks. And Charles with open mouth. What did Pa say? Did he write no more?
My dear Nabby, Johnny, Charlie, and Tommy, come here and kiss me. I'm full of anxieties, apprehending daily the dangers that surround us. My dear family.
Courage, I know, we have in abundance. Conduct, I hope we shall not want. Has ever any kingdom regained its liberty once invaded, without bloodshed? Tis a fine growing season, having turned a charming rain. Your meadow is fit to mow. In this letter, I have devoted 1 hour to you. I dare say you are not in debt. I must not grumble. I know your time is not yours nor mine. I want some sentimental effusions of the heart. Are they all absorbed in the great public? Being part of a whole, I lay claim to a greater share than I have had. A petition urging reconciliation with Great Britain was circulated at home by our no longer parent state. In fact, a tyrant state. And these colonies. Let us separate. They are unworthy to be our brethren. And Congress, in petitioning the king again for reconciliation, pleases, forgive me if I say, the timid and the weak.
My anxiety about you and the children, as well as the country, has been extreme, Abigail.
I must be the bearer of what will greatly afflict you. Your brother Elihu lies very dangerously sick. His life is despaired of.
I followed the body of my youngest brother to the grave. He had commanded a company of militia outside Boston, there taken dysentery, epidemic in the camp of which he died, leaving a young widow and 3 young children, greatly lamented by all who knew him, and by none more than by me, who knew the excellence of his heart.
So soon to return to the work of liberty, John? Is there a dearer name than friend? Think of it. For me?
Oh, Abigail, politics are a path among red-hot plowshares, and who then would run about barefoot among them? Yet somebody must. I must study politics and war that my sons may have liberty to study mathematics and philosophy. My sons are to study mathematics and philosophy, yes, but also geography, commerce, and agriculture in order to give their children a right to study painting, poetry, and music.
I have met with some very ill treatment. Our house is now a hospital in every part. Mrs. Randall has 1 child that is not expected to live out the night. 19 have been buried in the other parish since you left us. So much illness has occasioned a scarcity of medicine. I sit here with a heavy heart. I have no others since you left me. Another child lost last night due to this disorder. Thus does pestilence travel in the rear of war. I think I shall never be wedded to the world, so uncertain are all its enjoyments.
The most agreeable time I spend here is writing to you and conversing with you when I am alone. Is there no way for two friendly souls to converse together, although the bodies are 400 miles off? Yes, by letter. But I want a better communication. I want to hear you think or see your thoughts. The conclusion of your letter makes my heart throb more than a cannonade would. You bid me burn your letters. No, I must forget you first. I hope to be with you at Christmas.
Oh, that I could annihilate space. I have ideas to share with you.
Yeah.
I long to hear that you have declared an independency. And in the new code of law,
yeah,
I desire you would remember the ladies.
Ah.
Be more generous than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Put it out of the power of the vicious and the lawless to use us with cruelty and indignity, with impunity. My pen is always freer than my tongue. I have written many things to you that I suppose I could have never spoken. That your sex is naturally tyrannical admits of no dispute. But if attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no representation. My nights are tortured. I fear you are sick. Write me. Write me. It is my food by day and my rest by night.
My dear, I have concluded to borrow a little time from my sleep and my busy schedule and have written to you 10 sheets about government. Now, what will come of this, time will discover. As to your code of laws, I have to laugh.
What?
We are told that our struggle loosens the bonds everywhere. Children are disobedient, colleges turbulent, niggers insolent. But your letter was the first intimation that another tribe, more numerous and powerful than all the rest, were grown discontent.
Yeah.
This is rather too coarse a compliment, but you are so saucy, I won't blot it out.
John. A people may let a king fall, yet still remain a people. But if a king let his people slip from him, he is no longer a king. And as this is most certainly our case, why not proclaim to the world, in decisive terms, our own importance?
I think you shine as a stateswoman, Abigail.
Oh, thank you.
Among all the disappointments and perplexities which have fallen in my share of life, nothing has contributed so much to support my mind as the choice blessing of my wife. Your sentiments of the duties we owe to our country are such as become the best of women, and I might add, the best of men.
My dearest friends, my love burns with unabating fervor. No ocean could quench it, nor passage of time smother it. It lives in the bosom of your Portia. It cheers her in the lonely hour. It comforts her, even in the gloom that sometimes possesses her mind.
I have been here until I am stupefied.
They tell me they heard you were dead.
My soul and my body have been thrown into disorder by your absence in my life, Abigail, and a month or two more would make me the most insufferable cynic in the world. I see nothing but faults and follies and frailties and defects in anybody lately. People have all lost their good properties or I, my justice or discernment. But you, Abigail, you who have always softened and warmed my heart, shall restore my benevolence as well as my health and tranquility of mind. You shall polish and refine my life and manners, banish all the unsocial and ill-natured particles in my composition and form me to that happy temper that can reconcile a quick discernment with a perfect candor. Believe me now and ever, your faithful Isander. Oh, P.S. Soon, my dearest friend, we will come the advent of self-government in these colonies. Well-educated sons are vital to become virtuous soldiers, politicians, and scientists, necessary to national survival. We should strive to elevate the minds of our sons and exalt their courage.
Sons?
Hmm?
Every assistance and advantage which can be procured is afforded to the sons,
mm-hmm.
whilst the daughters are totally neglected.
Uh-oh.
You speak so earnestly for the best opportunities for the education in sons.
Mm.
What shall I say with regard to daughters, who every day experience the want of it? Why should children of the same parents be thus distinguished? It is really mortifying, sir. If we mean to have heroes, statesmen, and philosophers, we should have learned women.
Yes, the subject of independency must come. I'm sticking to the independency subject. Whether the Congress will nibble and piddle and dribble, waste time, treasure, or blood, it must come. Independency must come!
Is it to be independence for the ladies as well? Dearest friend, how could a mother educate her son if she herself was kept ignorant? Why should your sex wish for such a disparity in those whom they one day intend for companions and associates? It is my friend from the remembrance of joys that I have lost. That the arrow of affliction is pointed, I recollect the untitled man to whom I gave my heart. And in the agony of recollection, when time and distance present themselves together, wish he had been, never been any other. Who shall give me back time? How dearly I've paid for a titled husband. Who shall compensate me for the years I cannot recall? Should I wish you less wise, that I might enjoy more happiness? I cannot find that in my heart. I feel a disposition to quarrel with the race of beings that have cut me off in the midst of my days from the only society I delighted in. No man liveth for himself, says an authority I will not dispute. Life takes its complexion from inferior things. Only a few years are our portion. Who shall compensate me those years? Give me the man I love.
And do you so soon forget, Abigail?
Who shall give me back time?
And do you so soon
forget? Who shall give me back time?
The ground where liberty was fought for. No nation has long enjoyed that imperfect emancipation that we call a free government. Frivolities and military glories, luxuries and lies, sooner or later, undermine all principles. We are not a chosen people. We must and shall go the way of the earth.
Let me suppose that the same gracious being who smiled upon our union and blessed us in each other endowed my best friend with talents for the benefit of mankind and gave him a willing mind. I am today haunted by that old song and new sweet sentiments you wrote for me about our love. La 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 la,
ah.
La 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 la.
Barbara Allen.
La 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 la.
Yes, I made an attempt at some interesting lyrics. See what they were. Your kisses are the fairest ones, of that there is no question. My heart is yours, and my life is well. I say with no discretion. Now we both ache and long to touch and taste each full fair measure. A rush of joy and bliss be ours, a love to hold and treasure.
My thoughts are fixed. My latest wish depends upon thee, guide, guardian, husband, lover, friend.
I shall certainly return home by the spring, so wait.
Difficult as this day is, So cruel as this war has been.
With or without leave, home I will come.
Separated as I am on account of it from my dearest connection in life, my first choice would be the same if I again had youth to make it.
Wait to receive your old friend, Jay Adams.
Good night, John.
Good night, Abigail.
We do have some time for questions and comments, so if I may call Abigail and John back to the stage.
What we failed to say at the very beginning was this also incorporates a lot of our UU principles in the way they live their lives, not just for themselves, but for the wider world. I hope that you saw those themes as we went through it. Did you feel it needed to be identified in such a great audience of fantastic integrity?
As it was said, John and Abigail Adams were married for 54 years. And unlike many other couples of their time, it's well documented that John and Abigail were passionately in love with each other from the time they married until the day Abigail died. In their 54 years of marriage, they were separated for over 10 years because of John's work in public service. Abigail was often left behind at the farm in Braintree herself to raise children, but also tend to the farm and the livestock, and potentially protect the farm if English invaders were to come. Their only means of communication was through letters, and what we were reading were the actual letters by John and Abigail Adams. Their means of staying connected was through those letters. They were prolific through the years. We tried to select letters that would come and show the principles. John and Abigail Adams couldn't sign the book for the UU Church. And the Unitarian Universalist Association loves to start to make claims to certain people. Abigail was raised by a congregational minister as her father. And certainly there are some common principles between the congregational beliefs and the UUs. However, we hoped that the letters we selected represented that they did hold these principles of what Unitarian Universalists embrace. So certainly, any questions that you might have or comments?
Hi. Studied American history and women's history at Sarah Lawrence College. John Adams is my favorite. This is the best thing that could happen to me.
Thank you.
I'm so excited. When he came out with the breeches, I was like, no way. I was freaking out the entire time. I'm sure you heard me. I'm sorry. I'm not a very quiet or respectful audience member. I really wanted to talk about the word saucy, because in my women's history class, it was the way that I interpreted reading that exchange of letters was that he was being very dismissive. Like, oh, Abigail, calm down. Like, I've got so many other things to deal with. I've got bigger fish to fry. Like, but the way that you guys interpreted it was that it was a little bit like a winky, winky situation. which is pretty cool. But I think that's also pretty dismissive, because it's like, okay, lady, by the way, you're a woman, and if you're talking to me, it's probably going to be about sex. That's what you're good for. So I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
Well, you know, I have to say, as an actor, when you come across a word like saucy, you gotta work it. And I would say that in their marriage, at the beginning, John and Abigail did not like each other when they first met. John was accompanying someone who was coming to the house to court her older sister. And they were quite, in their exchanges, rather harsh to each other. And then slowly, they actually grew to respect each other. One of the things that John Adams appreciated was that Abigail would speak her mind. She was raised, she was never allowed to go to school. At the time, girls would go to the kitchen with the teacher and get some basic lessons of how to do math so you can do the farm, and how to read so you can read the Bible. And that was the extent of it. She had the equivalent of a third grade education. But her father, fortunately, had a vast library. And he encouraged her to read and would talk with her. And she was quite polished in Shakespeare and many other philosophers of the time. The problem was she never was able to attain polish, unlike John, who had gone to school and in writing skills. And in fact, her letters They have no periods. They have no commas. Her view was just, I have ideas. You'll figure it out when it's the end of the sentence. And scholars who have to go through her letters, it's a headache. But getting back to the saucy, Abigail never held back. She'd be very graceful, but boy, if she didn't agree with you, she'd let you have it. She was never allowed to go to school because she was very sickly as a child, and her mother was frightened that she would become ill. And yet, as this sickly child grew, she had quite the tongue. And so I do believe John would not be dismissive in his term, saucy. I think he saw that as an energy in her. And he always respected her, never dismissed her in public, and often would have to just sigh and walk away, but then he'd come back with something. And that was how their marriage was.
A lot like ours.
A comment and that leads into a question, and it has to do with the education of daughters. The comment is that Thomas Jefferson, writing to a friend about his own daughter, said, speaking of the state of schools in Virginia at the time, he said, her odds of marrying a blockhead I put at about 14 to 1. So she herself has to be educated, because I can't count on anybody else to raise her children intelligently. She has to be educated. What did happen to the Adams' daughter?
She grew and married the aide to George Washington. Had, I think, 3 children by him. Unfortunately, Washington's aide was not always the most loyal husband, and Elizabeth Navy ended up raising her children and eventually died of breast cancer while she was living with her parents. It was shortly before, Abigail died shortly after Elizabeth died of breast cancer, and it said that it was Elizabeth's death that just, Abigail just lost energy and never came back. Her books were in the house. And one of the things that was important, Abigail had grown up with a library, and when she married John, one of the things that was most important, she said, is, I'm still allowed to read. Because at that time, husbands could say, no, you can't do this, you can't do this. And John's like, sure. So in the same way, the paradox about, and so in the same way, Abigail raised her children to read, including Elizabeth. And at the time, they were stuck on this farm, and it would be wintry Massachusetts winters, and that was what they would do. The issue and the paradox about Abigail was she wrote prolifically that women should receive education equal to men. However, she felt it was to make them a better wife and mother. And this is the paradox about her. All her life, she never saw women taking office in public life like her husband was, or doing a trade. This is the paradox about her. Now, one can say, I think she's a product of her time, and maybe it was too forward to think, but on the other hand, she prized her life as a wife and mother. So therefore, I think that was just her world. So that is the paradox about her. And so she never raised Elizabeth to, go to university because she was going to be a better wife and mother.
And I was quiet around the house a lot.
Like you are now.
So you kept coming across phrases, especially in Abigail's letters, about what she dare not say, what she, couldn't quite bring herself to put down on paper. And I know from my own meager study of history that the norms about expressing emotions have changed a great deal over the years. Can you speak a little bit about what it was like in those times? Like what was okay to say, and what in these letters would be, oh, heavens to Betsy, like pushing the boundaries, please?
I'd like to go, and then Gary can add his own. Abigail was raised in Weymouth.
Thank you.
This is how we live our lives, by the way. I do all the talking. Tell him, you're like, shh. Abigail was raised in Weymouth, Massachusetts, which actually was an offshoot of Plymouth. So there were very much the norms of the Puritans.
And Puritans certainly were never supposed to show any public displays of affection. In fact, they weren't even supposed to feel passionate about each other. They were just supposed to copulate to raise children and don't feel good about it. So Abigail then grew up in this Congregationalist view and in a town that heavily prized still the Puritan ethic about work and about devotion and certainly take care of the community. But it did shift then into the allowance. And the interesting thing was her father, as a minister, apparently at the time ministers would often just go through this horrible process around original sin and they could never get over it and they were just always in angst. And her father just said, I don't care. And so, yes, she was raised with a lot of constraints, but she was raised by parents who were also quite kind to each other. I don't know that she saw much of the public display, and so therefore to write. And the piece I want to emphasize is that when they were writing these letters, there was no post office, if we can all recall. Letters were passed on. Somebody might be going by horseback to a nearby town from Abigail, so she'd say, please take this to this place. Go to a tavern and see if you can find somebody who's going to Boston. And then we get to Boston. Hey, if you're going to Philadelphia, oh, I'm not going to Philadelphia, but my cousin's going. And so these letters actually were out of order. Many times they were getting things where something had been written 2 months before and it was a little confusing. But others could read their letters. This was the problem. And so I think that's why Abigail was expressing it. And so for her to put these in her words, I think, was a sign of her devotion that she took the risk. Do you want to say anything else?
No.
And sadly, our time is concluded on that note.
Wait a minute.
Gary and Ellen, thank you very, very much.